Hello and welcome back to Pod Roast. This week we are joined by Tony Lloyd. He is a former Fortune 500 executive turned leadership, entrepreneur, speaker, everything in one. He's a fellow podcaster. It is amazing to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's an honor to be here with you, Jack.
Well, for those of you who don't know who Tony is, let me just drop the name Buffalo Wild Wings. Do we know what Buffalo Wild Wings is? Well, if you asked me this 2 weeks ago, I'd say, I know what it is, but I've never had it before. But luckily, thanks to my friend Will, who gave me a few, I don't even know what they're called, like the boneless chicken.
Boneless wings.
Boneless wings. There we go. And because I had those wings, I magically became aware of who Tony Lloyd was. I now know about Buffalo Wild Wings and Tony Lloyd. First off, I kind of alluded to you being related to Buffalo Wild Wings. And rather than continue to sort of botch your career of sorts, you know, I'd love to give you an opportunity to just introduce yourself.
So as you said, I'm Tony Lloyd. The only tricky bit if people are looking for me online is my last name is spelled with one L. So it's T-O-N-Y-L-O-Y-D, TonyLloyd.com. And so I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I'm a coach. So best-selling author of a book called Crazy Good Advice, 10 Lessons Learned from 150 Leading Social Entrepreneurs. I'm a keynote speaker and then TEDx speaker. And then I'm a coach, so primarily business coach, but also people who want to get into business. So people who are trying to launch social enterprises. And I'm a former Fortune 500 executive. Like you said, you mentioned Buffalo Wild Wings. That was one of my roles. I worked for a company called Medtronic, which makes medical devices. I worked with John Deere, who makes construction equipment, agricultural equipment. So I've worked with some really great brands over the years. I'm very fortunate. I mean, if you ask me anything about myself, I'm just going to tell you I am a lucky guy. That's what I am. Sometimes yeah. I call myself the Forrest Gump of business. It's like I just sort of bump into things and good things happen, and I just keep stumbling forward.
Well, I mean, you seem to be doing it right, though. So, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, so obviously, you've been in so many different fields. And, you know, you spoke about the Fortune 500, sort of, you know, that time in your life. And obviously now, like you said, you're an author, you're a keynote presenter. And, you know, so you kind of left that executive role and you've really turned into a sort of a consultant of sorts. Another thing that you've done ever since being a consultant is you start a podcast, like I said, which is awesome. There aren't enough podcasts in the world, but your podcast is called Social Entrepreneur. Well, first question, what is a social entrepreneur?
Yeah. So Jack, that's a great question. So a social entrepreneur, sometimes people think that means social media or something like that. It's not really. It's about making a social impact, right? So you run a nonprofit, you understand what it means to make social impact. Mm-hmm. But the entrepreneur part of that is that they have some business model where they're generating revenue, right? So they make a dollar and a difference. They make money, but the money is directed to a mission, right? So that is a social entrepreneur. And I could give you several examples or business models or types or names of them or, you know, some good examples if you'd like.
I know. I guess I'm a social, don't make any money entrepreneur.
And, yeah, right. So, okay. Yeah, that is the traditional model, right? So the traditional model, when we think about how am I going to make an impact in the world, we think first and foremost about nonprofits. And nonprofits have a long history. It's a great way to make a difference. It keeps people from, you know, taking the money and running because in a nonprofit, you can't own the stuff, right? So at the end, when you dissolve your company, all the assets have to go to another nonprofit. So, you know, it's a great business model. But when it comes to social entrepreneurship, so, you know, a few examples of that. I'm in Minnesota, and uh-huh. Here in town, we have a grilled cheese sandwich shop. Now, first of all, you've got my attention when you say grilled cheese sandwich shop, right? Just,
yeah,
you know, in and
very,
of itself.
Like, specific.
Right? Yeah. And so I love this place. And the name of the place is called All Square. And so the place, how they came up with that name is this. They hire people who are formerly incarcerated, right? So people who were in jail, prison, they're part of the justice system. And as they come out, they help them to get a job, to learn culinary skills, and then to be able to use those skills to go off and maybe start their own restaurant or maybe work in the industry or just save enough money in order to go do something completely different. So they have both a restaurant and an institute where they teach people how to do this. Now, they make a dollar and a difference by how they staff and who they staff with. Mm-hmm. Or there's one that's a woman named Joy McBrain. And Joy has a company called Fair Anita, and she sources jewelry and other things from women's collectives around the world. She works with more than 8,000 women in over 16 countries, and these women are making jewelry. And just one story from that, there were women in this war-torn country where there had been a big civil war, and they're like, how will we make anything? We don't know. So they went around and found the spent bullet casings from the war, and they melted them down and made necklaces out of them, and Joy sells them. So she makes a difference by how she sources and who she sources from. And so there's a lot of examples like that. You know, there are other ways by, you know, what you sell or how you sell it, or by, you know, what you share. So a common one, there's a company here in town called, Spoonful Apparel. That's it. Spoonful Apparel. Mm-hmm. And they sell t-shirts. So there's nothing really social about the mission of selling t-shirts, but they take their profits and they give it to the food bank. And so they have this great, cool, inspirational shirts, you know, things that you would want to put on your body and walk around with these cool, inspirational slogans. And so they, you know, they're really a great product that people want to have. They're desirable, but they don't take all that profit and then go, okay, let's go buy a second home, right? They take that profit and they give it to the food bank. So, you know, so people can be social entrepreneurs by what they sell, how they source, how they staff, or what they share.
I know. There's like part of me that's like, you know, I love to cook. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I should start an Alonzi restaurant.
When my wife and I traveled, we went to, like, for example, we went to Spain or we went to Paris. And there are people who will cook you a meal in their apartment. Right.
Really?
So it's like a local meal, local ingredients, and it's for people who are like staying in Airbnbs in the area. And so they connect with people in Airbnbs and they, you know, and they make meals. So maybe that's a business model for you. I don't know. Whatever it might be.
Right? I mean, yeah, I feel like you just go to their home and you tell them about your nonprofit while you're cooking them meal. And that, you know, genius. I like that idea. That's so smart. Well, you know, when you get my invite next week, I will send you a postcard saying I will come make a meal and talk to you about this nonprofit.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is crazy. Wow. I never really thought about that. But yeah, really it is. You know, you're able to make an impact and make a living. And you know, I think one question I always get asked, you know, with a nonprofit is like, do you get paid? And my answer right now is no, but typically people that work at a nonprofit do get paid, and some people like freak out when they hear that. I'm like, you know, I mean, they do have to live their life, right? Like,
right. They still have rent and groceries and things, whether they're working in a nonprofit or not.
You know, luckily right now, everyone that volunteers, I mean, they luckily have, you know, another job, which is good and bad, you know, because we're putting in hours. You know, our average work day is 6 p.m. to, you know, whatever, midnight. And so it's really a balancing act. Moral of the story is I really want to gonna start a restaurant now, and we'll hire a bunch of people. So getting back to your transition from corporate world to really consulting, from what I've read, you had a pretty good life and an amazing career. You were coming up with the boneless wings, like that's awesome, but still, you know, you wanted more, and you know, it sounds to me like fulfillment is what you were looking for. And you know, I think that this is very common in kids, because like, at least as me, I still do, my parents were like, Jack, get good grades and there'll be rewards, and you know, like my dad was like, I'll give you $10 per A on your report card. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, awesome. That was like a monetary incentive.
Could your dad adopt me? I could use 10 bucks.
I know, right? Yeah. It's thanks to those A's that I was able to start a nonprofit. All those $10 really added up. But, you know, so kids, you know, they have these needs for fulfillment, and they say, I need good grades. And if I don't get those good grades, I've failed in life. Or like, I need to get in the best school. I need to get into Harvard. Admittedly, I kind of had the same thing because my sister, she's so smart. She went to Cornell. She works at Microsoft now. She's probably listening to this podcast. And she got engaged. So I'll call that out.
Awesome, congratulations. Right?
Perfect life. And I'm over here and I'm just like, couldn't get it. But, you know, obviously kids seek fulfillment and they have these really high expectations and they can't reach them and then they don't reach them. And then it's like, I failed. So what would your advice be to these kids on, you know, how to take a step back, similar to what you did?
Yeah. So, you know, it all depends, right? Everything is, it depends. I, you know, no matter what question you ask me, it's probably going to be, it depends. So everybody is in a different position in their life, right? So some people can sustain themselves with very little. Some people need more. I will tell you one thing that's a great secret to life, and it doesn't get talked about enough, is save a little money. Right. You know, that's always a little, just put a little back for that rainy day because it really is coming. But, you know, one of the things is there's a guy named Daniel Pink, and he wrote a book called Drive. And I really like this book. But if you took the whole book and boil it down, he said there's three things that motivate people. So autonomy.
Okay.
Mastery and purpose. So autonomy is the ability to control your own destination, the sense of agency, like I'm in the driver's seat and I'm driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second is mastery. So, right, being able to master a new skill. Like, you know, you and I were talking before we started recording here. You've had to master so much in order to produce a podcast, all this technology and all the, you know, making sure the sound is right and post-production and, you know, promotion and all that stuff, right? But but you're probably engaged because you're learning new skills. And so that sense of achieving mastery, that gives you a sense of motivation. And then the third thing, though, is purpose. And purpose is that thing that keeps you up at night. What's that thing that's stuck for you, right? So, you know, the woman who started the t-shirt company I mentioned a while ago, you know what? I called it the wrong name. I think I called it Soulful Project. It's Spoonful Apparel. That's what it's called. So the woman who started Spoonful Apparel, she started it because she was a preschool teacher. And one of the kids, she figured out at the end of the first quarter of the year, she figured out that this kid had not eaten lunch one time the entire school year.
Wow.
And that's when it hit her. Oh my God, he doesn't have food, right? He doesn't have food money. He doesn't have food. So first thing she did was she went home and she fixed the guy's sandwich, right? You know, let's just fix that, right? Uh-huh. But then she said, I can't spend the rest of my life fixing one sandwich for every person who's hungry. So what can I do? Well, she had this other idea over here about inspirational t-shirts. So she mashed those two together and that mashup became Spoonful Apparel. So there's something in your heart. There's something that keeps you up at night. And so if you think about, you know, like there's the 17 sustainable development goals from the United Nations. So everything from hunger to clean water to equity, you know, just all these different things. You could, if you looked down that list of 17 things and ask yourself, what pulls at my heartstrings? What's that thing that I want to go work on? And then figure out how to do that in a way that you're growing, right? So you're getting some mastery, but then in a way that you have control of your own destiny. And usually the way that ends up looking is somebody starts either a nonprofit or a business. So sometimes you can join a company, and I highly recommend that, join a company that's already working on that issue and get experience and get to know the marketplace and get to know what's going on and see where the gaps are and then come up with a solution for that. But if you're driving towards that sort of sense of fulfillment in your life, finding a way, first of all, to work on purpose, to work on something that you really care about. Second, in a way that you're gaining in your mastery, you're growing in some way. And then third of all, some way that you can have a sense of autonomy or a sense of control of your own destiny. That's like the golden trifecta right there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you spoke about getting into the market and, you know, going to an existing business and, you know, kind of seeing, hey, what are the flaws? And that reminds me of, I want to say my first job, but it wasn't my first job because, of course, I didn't take your advice. And my first job was one that I created myself, a company I created. So I don't know what job number this was, but basically last year when I got it, it was at a restaurant. And, you know, I had previously worked at like the executive level. I was also like a child, but I was an executive. So whatever, you know, you work at a restaurant and you're like a host because, you know, I wasn't 18, and if you can't serve liquor, then they don't want you as a waiter. So, but yeah, so then you're there, you're at the bottom of the food chain, and you really realize management has one idea and it just gets delivered on a completely different level. Like, on the front line, like in some instances, you're treated terribly. And then it's like the management, all they wanted to do is cut the costs or whatever. And it's like, not only have you cut the costs, you've made everyone hate the management, you know? And getting that experience, one, was like finishing up there, I was like, oh my gosh, like when I lead a company, I cannot do the hierarchy, like I'm in control. I'm younger than every single person that works with me. Every single person. There is not one person younger than me. And like their average like 20 years older than me, up to like 50 years older than me, which I think is hilarious. But never would I have learned that. I would have still been like a dictator, like in the workplace. And even though there's part of me that's very firm in the belief that I want to be my own boss, I think it is so important. You learn so much, even if it's negative. I mean, there's obviously positive things you learn too.
Yeah.
But you'd learn so much by putting yourself in that workplace. And seeing what's wrong with it.
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind is everybody who works with you or for you, they also want autonomy and mastery and purpose, right? So if you can find a way to provide that for them, then they'll bloom and then they'll want to do more and more and more, right? As long as they're continuing with their own autonomy, you're giving them some leeway, you're saying, here's the guidelines, but I need you to go do that thing. You let them learn new skills and then you let them work in alignment with their purpose. I think if you can do that, that's golden.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because I don't know if it's exactly intentional, but being an 18-year-old leading a corporation, a nonprofit, like, there's just so much. I just realized I had to like file my nonprofit tax forms like last week. I was like, oh my God, I totally spaced on that. But you know, there's so much. And so you really do have to like let people do their thing. And I've inadvertently done that because I don't know what I'm doing. But it's great because everyone's like, hey, I have experience with this. I can bring this to the table. And it's awesome because people can, you know, show off what they've learned and truly acknowledging someone. At least for me, if not that it happens very much when I was working at these jobs, but if they're like, wow, Jack, we really like your customer service skills. You really seem like you've talked to a lot of people. Good job. That never happened. But I know that if it did happen, if someone complimented me, it would have meant the world. And I would have felt great, even though I'm still making minimum wage, can't pay for anything, and still don't own a car because I decided to start a nonprofit with the car money.
There you go.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I feel fulfilled. So, you know, that's a success. So, obviously, I've incorporated my little personal anecdote about being at the bottom of the food chain, bottom of the ladder. And I think that really applies to a lot of people as they're in high school, in college, getting out of college. I mean, not many people leave college and are like executive leaders. So, for the people that go into the entry-level jobs, what would you recommend that they look for in their employers to make sure that it aligns with their personal values and beliefs?
Well, first of all, let me just acknowledge that not everybody gets to choose, right? There are some people who are like they're working three jobs and it's barely enough and they're riding the bus. And, you know, so to say, you know, go find yourself and follow your bliss or whatever, you know, it's like, yeah, not everybody gets to do that. But in as much as you can, you know, make some choices, right? So, you know, there's a thing called B Corps or benefit corporations. And so, you know, there are lists of those. And one way to find a company that has a mission and they're also making money is to find a list of those B Corps and just start pounding on their doors, you know, say, I want in. Find one that's working on something that you care about. Or there's, you know, lists called conscious companies, right? And, you know, even like this is a strange thing that a lot of people don't think about. There's an investment instrument called ESGs, and that stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. And so you could say best rated companies for ESGs or environmental social governance, and you can find a list of them and just start saying, ah, those are the kinds of companies I want to work for. Or think about what's some social mission you care about. So let's just say, you know, LGBTQ rights, or let's just say, you know, housing or whatever. Figure out which corporations are donating to causes. You know, there's a local gala going on, or there's a local fundraiser of some kind. What companies are putting money into that? And start saying, that's a company that cares about this. The other thing I would say is when you go to interview, ask them about their mission. You know, ask them about the kind, how you can align your purpose and their purpose together. And the more you can align those things together, the better off you're going to be. And then one more thing to do before you go into a company, no matter what kind of company, you might check out Glassdoor, because glassdoor.com, I think it is. You know, people will leave reviews and they'll say some really honest things sometimes. And sometimes,
Definitely.
You know, sometimes there are people who are just bitter and angry and they're just going to say something bad about everything and everybody. Trust me, I get enough bad reviews online as it is, you know. And so, I you have to have a little bit of a thick skin for that stuff. But, you know, there are companies that have a very high social mission, but their internal politics are just garbage. And so you have to look out for that. Just because they have a social mission on the front door doesn't mean behind that door everything is great. So that's what I would think is, you know, look for benefit corporations or conscious companies or companies on the ESG list, or, you know, like look at glassdoor.com to make sure that these are good companies. That's where I would start.
Definitely, I agree. So, you know, you talk about the intersection of profit and purpose, and then I come into the equation and I'm like, mental health. And I'm obviously like, mental health, you know. But do you see a way that this intersection to really take place with mental health?
Yeah, I do. You know, there's always a way to have a business model for almost every situation, right? So you don't want to have a business model that stands in the way of access to, right? So is there a way for you to have a business model that gives better access to? And so, you know, a couple of examples of that, since you mentioned mental health, there's an app called Headspace, and I don't know if you know it, but, you know, Andy is the guy who's talking, and, you know, if you got your earbuds in or your headset like you've got, and you're listening to Andy walk you through a guided meditation, it's like, that just makes me so happy. You know, it's like my morning routine, listen to Andy walk me into my morning meditation, you know, so.
I know, it's like I use Calm and stuff like that.
Calm is another one, yep. There's betterhelp.com or Talkspace, that, you know, those are ones.
Those are the two paid for therapy applications that when I started the nonprofit, I was like, that's great that we're bringing it. Like Talkspace and BetterHelp are great examples of bringing that treatment industry mobile. But obviously at the same time, we're looking at kids and, you know, $100 to a kid is,
yeah.
I mean, if you tell a kid, hey, you can spend $100 on therapy, or you can spend $100 on literally anything else.
Yeah.
The kid is not going to choose therapy. And there is research that suggests the same thing. It's also like common sense, though. It's just so interesting.
There are other business models, though, right? So for example, you know, you can start a YouTube channel, which is free, right? And then if you can build up your listenership, then you can start getting sponsorship. Or let's just say that you couldn't get sponsorship. Well, interview a whole bunch of people to find out the things that you want, and then take what you've learned and put it into a book and sell the book. You know, I mean, there are just so many ways to monetize knowledge. I mean, create an e-course for people who could take it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are so many ways to create a knowledge product. And it doesn't have to be $100 a month or something. It can be, you know, $7 or something. So there are a lot of ways to monetize things and to create a business model.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so important because it speaks to what I kind of want to do with my life. And that's for adults, I'd love to write a book. If I can finally, you know, write out the 4 years of treatment and trauma I went through. And that's just crazy. That would be like a best-selling book. It's like the Titanic, pretty much. But, you know, with kids, I think everything's monetized. And I think it is like a good way of making money. Like it is, you know, you're not charging people and you're monetizing things. And, you know, I just, as of right now, though, the one thing I was worried about with monetizing, you know, with mental health was, you know, if I was like, hey, yeah, get Google ads in my app. The last thing I'd want is, you know, a kid to be like, hey, I'm like super depressed, and then have like, you know, a knife ad come up. And it's like, are we serious right now? Like, come on. So that, you know, I strayed from that, but, you know, I think if we ran our own ad network and we're like, yeah, we'll work with Calm or Headspace, you know, or Fitbit. I wouldn't mind Fitbit. I like Fitbit.
You know, there's somebody, and I'll have to think of her name and get back to you later, but there's somebody I interviewed, and she does like in-app advertisement, and all of the people who buy the ads, they are social benefit corporations. And so the ads that you're serving up, they come from this for good kind of network. And so I'll have to look to see what her name is. I can't recall it off the top of my head right now, but we can talk afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. So going back to your corporate world, your website and your keynotes and all these things, you know, you make it pretty clear that you made this career change because companies really overemphasize shareholders at the expense of the stakeholders. And I guess to translate that into general terms, it's employers are really prioritizing those that are investors, and then the employees, they're, you know, whatever, we can deal with them next, like, you know. And so how do you think businesses can do a better job at, you know, prioritizing their employees' mental health?
Right. So first of all, you know, it's never true when we make a generalization, right? So you and I both understand, and I just want to clarify that for your listener, that not every company throws the employee under the bus just for the people who own the stock, right? So, you know, so they're...
Oh, definitely.
Right, right. So not all companies. We need that hashtag, not all companies, right?
I know. Hashtag not all companies. Please don't get mad at me, companies that want to partner with us, please.
So, different companies do a better job of, you know, you mentioned stakeholders. So the planet is a stakeholder, right? The communities in which we work, those are stakeholders. Uh-huh. The suppliers who sell goods to us that we turn around and sell to somebody else, those are stakeholders, and, you know, and employees. And so you know, I know that you think a lot about mental health and well-being, and there are companies that do a nice job on well-being, but the way that they got there was it has to make business sense, right? Mm-hmm. So helping companies to understand, and this is a business model right here, working with companies mm-hmm. to help them to understand that well-being creates more productivity, it creates more engagement, it makes employees want to stay longer, so you don't have as much turnover, blah, blah, blah. So there's a business case to be made for well-being. And so, you know, some companies have discovered that, if you do an employee survey and you say, super secret survey, nobody's going to see who answer what question, what way, how engaged are you at work, and you ask a whole series of questions of different ways of getting at employee mm-hmm. engagement, something like 83% of all employees are either disengaged or actively disengaged. In other words, they're looking to get out. And so only a small percentage, 17% or so, of employees say, yeah, I'm engaged with my job. So think of the massive productivity boost that a company could get from taking good care of their employees and looking out for their well-being, because you can't pour from an empty vessel, right? So,
absolutely.
So I think that there is a business model to be made. And when you think about, you know, what is a business model around mental health, that is one of them. Helping companies to survey their employees, to understand where they're at, to look at, you know, a financial model that says, because this massive number of people are disengaged, you're losing this much productivity. And if then, you know, if you can solve this problem, how much money would that be worth to you? And employers can do the math. They get it. Right. So,
yeah.
So I do think that there are companies that do a nice job of that. There are good consulting companies that can help companies with that. And, you know, even nonprofits can engage in that.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's just so interesting, like, you know, how really a lot of times, yeah, businesses will stumble upon like the importance of mental health because, you know, they'll see, hey, wow, it's like it really benefits our efficiency and our costs and everything. And I mean, that's true. It also benefits mental health and the employees. And that and the fact that those work together is great because not only do businesses get what they want, but employees really are, you know, listened to. And so everyone's really happy. And, you know, that's the ideal way of going about it. And you know, it just reminds me, my sister, you know, she's always telling me about Microsoft. She's like, yeah, you know, like they give us like the do whatever you want day. And I'm just like, are you serious? Like, they're like, yeah, they pay you to, you know, just do whatever you want for a day. And I was like, that is genius. Like, that is so cool, you know, to have just a day to take care of yourself. Gosh, I wish I could afford doing that. And we don't make any money. So I can't, I mean, I can do a do whatever you want day, but it's not like a, it's pretty much a do whatever you want day every day,
right?
At Alonzi. So, so I'll admit, I have not yet read your book, Crazy Good Advice, and I feel like there are so like it's Crazy Good Advice. Right. Da 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 da. Yeah, super long name. But it's on my list. So, do you think there's a particular lesson from social entrepreneurs that young people can take note of?
I do, and you know the way that this book came about was I, like you, I was interviewing people, and so at the end of every episode, I would just say, "What's one key piece of advice? What's something you've learned on your journey you could pass along?" Mm-hmm. And so I started collecting those in a spreadsheet, and then I started hearing, like, I was at episode 150, and I go, you know what? I think I'm hearing the same stuff again and again.
Yeah.
And so I put all the advice in the spreadsheet, and in the next column over, I put a category, right? So what mm-hmm. if I were to put that in a bucket, what category would I put that in? And then I went down through and I categorized all these first 150 pieces of advice. And then I sorted the spreadsheet by the category. And sure enough, it turns out there were only 10 things that they were saying again and again, right? And so, you know, you hear the same things again and again. So, you know, first thing they usually say is, it's going to be massive work. Like the title of the book is Crazy Good Advice. Well, that title comes from a guy from Seattle. His name is Looney Libous. So if you're going to ask anybody about craziness, ask a guy named Looney, right?
I know, right? Wow.
And so Looney said, look, when you tell your friends and your family and your loved ones that you're going to start a company and they tell you that you're crazy.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. He said, they're right. He said, they are right. When they say you are crazy, they're absolutely right. But he said, if you're going to be crazy enough to go do this thing, you need to make the biggest impact you possibly can. And so that is like the first thing is get ready for some massive hard work, right? And what's going to get you through that massive hard work? Well, purpose, right? So purpose produces passion, and that passion will drive you forward. And then, you know, keep in mind, you can't solve a problem you don't understand. So empathy is a key thing that that my guest talked about. Like spending time with, walking a mile in the shoes of, being present. You know, there's this concept called human-centric design. And human-centric mm-hmm. design means you design with the community, not for the community. You're in the community. You're watching the needs rise up and you're watching the assets that they have available to them and you're putting those things together and building solutions out of it. And so engaging with empathy. And then, you know, so other things like building something that lasts through a sustainable business model, working at the systemic level. So growing from a small thing to something that is big enough and scales enough so that you can really make some massive change. Finding your funding, how people went about and found different funding models, and then figuring out when to persist and when to pivot. Because you know, there are times when you've been banging your head against that wall long enough and you go, you know what, it might be time for me to just, you know, slightly move in a different direction. And then, you know, you're building your community, you're building your tribe. But then the last thing two more things. One is put on your own oxygen mask, right? So make sure that you're practicing self-care. And then the last thing is just start, right? And I say that for last because, you know, it was the number one piece of advice of all the people who said it in those first 150, probably 50 of them said, look, just start doing something. And, you know, usually, we get started and we become attached to the solution we've developed, and you can't do that. You have to be attached to the problem, because the solution may take one form for a period of time, a different form for another period of time, and a different form. So just making sure that you're attached to a problem and not a solution. So just start. That's the key piece of advice.
Well, I'm good. I'm glad I just started. That's, you know, gosh, that's like embrace the crazy. I know. It's like, that is crazy good advice. Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's go buy the book now. Wow.
But you can download it for free on my website. So there's an electronic version. It's my favorite price, is free.
Free. I love that price too.
So if you or anyone goes to tonyloyd.com, it's TonyLoyd with one L, tonyloyd.com. Tony Lloyd. I don't enunciate well sometimes. I must be tired right now, you know.
Well, it'll be in the description of the podcast as there well, you go. So that there should help. Well, as we near the end of the discussion, I just have a few more questions. You know, in my field, the problem that I focus on is the lack of support that, you know, people have. And the solution, I also get attached to the solution, I'll admit, you know, is mentors. And so, you know, I'm wondering, did you have or do you have any mentors in your life or your career that helped you along the way?
Yeah, the answer is yes. I mean, no one successful has ever gotten there without somebody giving them a hand up, right?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, Alonzi, we really focus on mentoring, and I guess that also includes advice. And you were talking about, you know, getting advice. And so I'm curious, what is some of the best advice that you've gotten?
Right. You know, one of the key pieces of advice, I had this career as a consultant early on. So, you know, came out of school and that was my primary role. I was traveling around the country and I was doing technical consulting work. Mm-hmm. And at every site, we had a guy named that we called the site coordinator. And their primary job was to look over all these, you know, hot young bucks that were coming through the door, you know, dozer bucks or whatever, you know, like all these people who were coming out of school were gunned up, were ready to go do all this consulting. And this was usually a very seasoned person, you know, who was there to sort of make sure everybody got their, you know, their paychecks and make sure that everybody, you know, was treating the customer well and just, you know, was very, you know, sort of oversaw the things. And so my first consulting role was in Miami, and I went down there, and it's in June 1st, and it's warm June kind of morning, and there's a guy named Pete, and he's the site coordinator, and Pete had this styrofoam coffee cup in his hand, and a little gathering of new recruits were gathered around him, you know, probably a dozen young people there, and Pete's standing there talking to us, and I noticed that people are like fixated. They're like looking at his coffee cup. And I'm like, what's going on? And I look down and his hand is shaking. Like his hand is just really shaking hard. And the coffee is coming out of the cup and spilling down his hand. And like steam is coming off of his fingers and his fingers are turning bright red. And he's talking, and he's just talking very calmly to us, you know. And then he noticed that we're all looking at him, and he looks down at his hand and he realizes what he's done. And so he takes the coffee out of his right hand and moves it to his left. And he goes, let me just explain something to you. He said, you know, a few years ago, I was, you know, here working at this facility, and I had a really bad car accident. Uh-huh. And he said, and it damaged my nerves, and sometimes I can't, you know, feel part of my body. And he said, and then I they put me on pain pills, and I got addicted to the pain pills. And he said, and then I had to go into rehab. And he said, and I spent like 6 months trying to get myself cleaned up. I kept going in and out of rehab. And finally, I got my life together. And he said, and when I came out, they helped me to get this job because it's less stress and I can work with young people like you and it makes me feel good. And I can walk around and do, you know, nonsensical things. And he said, but here's the thing. And he just like really looked us in the eye and he goes, be good to people on your way up in the business and they're going to be good to you on the way back down. And I'm here to tell you, you will come back down. And I heard that message, like my first day of consulting, my first job, like, you know, first road job like that. And it stuck with me, you know, because over the years, I saw people who would just like step on my back and they would climb over me and they go 2-3 rungs up the ladder above me. And then all of a sudden they come tumbling back down behind me as I went up to the next level, you know? And so kindness, I think, is a key and critical concept. It is something that we all have to practice. And that was one of my best pieces of advice, you know? And the only other thing I'll say is, Marie Forleo, I don't know if you know who she is, but, you know,
I have no idea.
Interesting, entertaining woman. But she has this phrase. She says, everything is figure outable. And I love that.
Oh,
everything is figure outable. And I think that's a great piece of advice is, you know, it like SEO. Well, I don't know what SEO is, but it's figure outable. So let's just figure out our SEO, right? So, you know, everything is figure outable. And I really like that one.
That's awesome. That's great advice. So, you know, focusing now on today, you know, we're here, we're listening to the podcast. We're in the middle of a pandemic, or if people are listening to this years from now, maybe we're not in a pandemic. I really hope we're not in a pandemic anymore. Yeah. But as of right now, we're in a pandemic and we're, you know, we're dealing with problems from climate change to racial inequality. What do you think young people can be doing right now and in the coming years to, you know, be a part of the solution? Because obviously you deviated from the pact and you've done great and you're, you know, providing insight. And in order to really succeed and to encourage, you know, change, which is what we need right now so much in society, other people are going to need to do similar things. And so what would you say people could be doing right now, and specifically young people?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's like everything is disrupted, right? And that in every crisis, there is an opportunity. And so if you think about like some of the things you mentioned, you know, COVID-19, social injustice, political unrest, economic downturn, environmental collapse. I mean, we could go on.
I mean,
it's
2020 is the worst year.
Yeah.
I mean,
Kobe
Bryant died too. I mean, it's just
You know, if I kept listing those things, I might go get on a bridge and jump off or something. Right?
I know. It's like, it's really sad. Like, and that's what a lot of kids are faced with right now.
Yeah. And if you think about it, it's, you know, those are kind of the inputs. Those are the things that are happening in our lives. And then the impact of that is that it, you know, it creates these problems in our lives, right? So not just health and safety, but like employment or finances or, you know, housing or education or transportation or even like our recreation or our social connections, right? So it creates these problems. Well, a problem is an opportunity. It is an opportunity to do something. So if you take any one of those, you know, if you think about, you know, gosh, I'd love to be able to go visit with my grandparents, but my grandparents happen to be in a nursing care facility and no one is allowed in or out. And then you just look at that as that's a problem. I wonder what I could do about that. And so figuring out what the gap is between what people want and what they have today and seeing that opportunity and getting really, really clear. And I have to tell you, the biggest mistake I see people make when it comes to being an entrepreneur, starting their own venture or starting a nonprofit or starting a student group or starting a whatever, is they don't take the time to clearly define the problem, right? So they go off to solve the wrong problem, and they make lots of headway on the wrong thing. And so getting really clear on what is the problem. And then, right now at the University of Minnesota, I'm teaching a class, and it's called Design for a Disrupted World. Uh-huh. And so how do you design solutions for a disrupted world? I'm going to recommend somebody's book. It's not my book, but it's called Story Design. It's written by Denise Winters. Story mm-hmm. Design, The Creative Way to Innovate. And so, you can put a link to that in your show notes and recommend it to your listeners. It really walks you through the process of, if the story today has a really crappy outcome, then how can we write a new story that has a different outcome? And then how can we just test that in a very small way, right? So create a prototype of something, show it to somebody, get a reaction from them, and then, move on from there. So, that's what I would say is, first of all, join a company that is doing something you want to take advantage of, you want to be part of. And if you can't find something, start something. That's your job.
There you go. That's awesome. And I think back now, and you were really speaking about, a common mistake that entrepreneurs make, and that's, not defining the problem, not knowing what they're going out to address. And, it really does remind me of, so last year as a senior in high school, I did this independent research project, and, I had a teacher. And, at the time I was super frustrated because, listen, I want to make an app and I want to help kids and we're going to give them therapists. Yeah, I started saying like therapist at first, like luckily. So then she comes in and she's like, yeah, well, have you done all the research? Like, do you know the problems? And I'm like, yeah, depression, anxiety, duh. And she's like, those might be your problems, but it doesn't sound like you got to know about other people. And I was like, excuse me, I've spent like 3 years in treatment, and it's God, at the time, like the grades I got in the class I was just like, what is going on? Like, what? I was like, how can she not see? I'm trying to freaking start a foundation, all this
right.
big
yeah.
big stuff.
Yeah.
And now I look back and it's like, I am so grateful for the fact that she wasn't like, good job, Jack. Yes, keep going. Don't do any research. You know what you're doing. Like, I mean, she made me do a lot of research. And I I did not love it, but I love having the research now. And now I love it because it's to the point where I now have other people that work with me that love doing research. And so I don't have to do any more research, and it's just like, it's the best of both worlds. Well, that about wraps up our conversation right now. Thank you again so much for joining us, Tony.
I'm happy to be here.
And for all of you that don't know or didn't Google him halfway through the podcast, look him up on the Buffalo Wild Wings menu, any of that. If you haven't done that, you definitely should check out his website. I'll let you, go over that. I think you've mentioned it at least 3 times in here, but just in case, we'll give it to them one more time.
Yeah, it's TonyLoyd. And if you just Google my name, Tony Lloyd, and make sure that you spell the last name with one L, Lloyd, you can find me. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, it comes up. Your whole Wikipedia, this is a pretty cool guy we got here. I mean, it's crazy. I'm still waiting for, if you look up me on Google, it's just a soccer player. And I don't play soccer at all. But yeah, thank you again so much for joining me. This has been incredible to have you here. And obviously, if anyone wants to continue learning more about Tony, he's got his own podcast. I strongly encourage you all to check it out. Who knows? Maybe I'll be able to join your podcast. I don't know. Awesome. Well, we will sign off and we'll see all of you all next week on a brand new episode of Podros. Thanks again for listening.